Welcome. This is Red Ice Radio, and you are listening to bbsradio.com. And I want to thank you all for tuning in today. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I'm the editor of the Red Ice website, and I will be your host for the following hour. I'm coming to you from our command center, the new Red Ice studio from the west coast of Sweden. And everyone tuning in today are in for a real treat, because we have David Icke joining us today. And I'm very excited about this show. And I hope and also believe that most people out there listening to this show are familiar with at least some of David's excellent work and research. And this is just an hour short program, so it might not be the best place to go through the entire background story of Mr. Icke. His research history is just too long, and to cover this all it in this program would just wouldn't be enough. So, but I do want to mention to those who are, might not be familiar with David Icke that he's the author to of about a half a dozen books, including The Biggest Secret, Tales from the Time Loop, and his latest book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion. He also have a few videos and DVDs out there, Reptilian Agenda, an excellent interview with Zulu shaman Credo Mutwa, and also Secrets of the Matrix, to name just a few. And you can find out more about David's books and DVDs simply by going to davidicke.com. That's davidicke.com. And there's lots to talk about, and I want to spend as much time as possible with our guests. So I want to welcome you to the program, David, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
It's a pleasure, Henry.
It's great to have you here. I'm very excited about this show. And first up here, let me just say that I want to thank you for having the courage to, you know, speak your truth and following your research where it has led you, and it has awakened a lot of people, including myself. And I just want to, you know, kind of as a personal note here, say that I appreciate your work very, very much. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's something that a lot of people that start on this road will appreciate, that once you start to realize what's going on in the world, there's no turning back anyway, because you can't walk away and unless you go through some amnesic program and forget about what you now know, you can't walk away and just forget about it, because what I was writing about years ago is now happening on the news every day, never mind every week, and we're now in the eye of the storm, and we've got to, you know, all of us stand up and face it, so that we can change the direction of the way the world's going, which is towards a very Orwellian, global, no other word for it, fascist state.
Yeah, it's absolutely, I can agree more. And you know, as to start things off here, I also have my own, you know, alternative news website, in
yep.
quotes, and I follow much of the strangeness and the bizarre world of the headlines out there, and much as you do with your excellent headlines page on davidicke.com, and I can't resist the urge to ask you right up front here what you think about the latest, quote, official release of the frames of Flight 77 hitting the Pentagon.
Well, there's a number of common things that you can apply to these events that change the direction of the world or change the direction of a society that they take place in. Events like 9/11 obviously change the direction of the world, which is what has happened. But you can look at other things like President Kennedy's assassination, Princess Diana's assassination, on and on it goes, the Oklahoma bombing, the Murrah Building, and you find a series of common themes, and one of them is this: when us seeing or hearing something would support the official story we're being given, we see or hear it. When us seeing or hearing something would destroy the official story, then we don't see or hear it. This is why in a society in which increasingly there is mass surveillance, cameras cameras are not working or the tapes go missing whenever there is a situation where they would show us what actually happened in one of these events. I was interviewed on television yesterday about the Diana assassination Paris, and that was another classic. 17 traffic cameras between the Ritz Hotel and the Pont d'Alma Tunnel, none of them working. Also, the normal level of surveillance or security, rather, not surveillance, for Princess Diana was removed at the crucial time.
Yes.
And we were down to one security guard sitting in the front seat. Now, you look at the assassination of Martin Luther King, the same thing happened. You look at the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the same thing happened. There was four security guards on the car behind, none on his. In terms of security cameras, the camera tapes around the Murrah building, security cameras in buildings around the Murrah building in Oklahoma, were taken by the FBI immediately afterwards, and
yes.
I've never been seen again. They say they can't release them because of national security. Well, no, it's not national security. It's security of the official story. And when you come round again to the question you asked about the plane hitting the Pentagon, or what is claimed to have been a plane, again, we have 84, I think it is, surveillance cameras, as you would, around the building that is the headquarters of the American military.
Yes.
You also have cameras around the Pentagon and other buildings. Particularly, there's a gas station across the road, which I've actually been to. It's only for military people, as I found out when I pulled in. But it had surveillance cameras looking out across the gas station, out to the very part of the building, the Pentagon, where the explosion happened. And none of those tapes have been made public, as the gas station people have confirmed, the FBI, as usual, came along on the morning of 9/11 and took them away, and they've never been seen again. So what is happening, Hendrik, is all the time we are being kept from anything that would destroy the official story, because these stories are just make-believe so that they can use the justification of these terrorist events to change society through more surveillance and more control. However, what's happening, as you'll of course noted yourself, is that this so-called 9/11 truth movement is now really starting to gain ground. It's now getting some very significant people within the system who are coming out and saying this makes absolutely no sense. So they're now in a situation where they're having to try to justify the official story more and more as this questioning gathers pace. There was a poll this week, apparently, which showed that 42% of American people want and believe there's been a cover-up and want a proper inquiry into what happened on 9/11. And 9/11 is the key, of course, because without that, all that has followed with the war on terrorism and the more and more control and surveillance would never have been justified.
Exactly.
And so what we're looking at with this ridiculous footage that you refer to of the plane hitting the Pentagon from a surveillance camera, which is just so bad, you just wonder why they bothered, is a desperate effort now to keep shoring up the dam to stop the official story being in the public domain. Never mind, it already has been destroyed outside the public domain, but in the main public domain, being demolished. And once that's gone, everything else goes with it.
Yeah, exactly. And there have been a few articles I've seen that hint that they will release more footage soon. And what do you make of that? Do you think they ever will?
Well, there's two things that we need to appreciate here. One is that they are desperate to shore up the official story, and the other one is the level of technology they have now. To be honest, I was surprised when they released that so-called footage a few days ago at how bad it actually was, because they have the ability to do amazing things with a videotape and digital media now. And it would not surprise me if at some point they did come out with what seemed to be a proper shot or sequence of what seems to be like a 757 hitting the Pentagon.
Exactly.
But then we must ask the question, hold on a second. We're now in 2006. The 9/11 horror happened in 2001. Why didn't you show us this earlier, when you could have put an end to all the speculation about what happened at the Pentagon? It's the same with the Oklahoma bombing. According to a television station in Oklahoma, and particularly a reporter called Jana Davis, who did a lot of a serious investigation at the time into what really happened in Oklahoma. She came across people, and other reporters did too, who'd actually seen some of the videos that were taken from surveillance cameras around the Mueller building. And they talk about the fact that, yes, there was someone in the Ryder truck and getting out of the Ryder truck that looked like McVeigh, but there was a second person too who was of Middle Eastern appearance. And of course, this was the John Doe 2 that was talked about immediately after the bombing happened in 1995, but then suddenly was all forgotten about. So the question is, if you've got the surveillance cameras showing what happened, then just when you have the court case against McVeigh, you don't really need much of a court case. Just put the video in the recorder, play it to the jury, and we'll all see what happened.
Exactly.
The reason they didn't is because McVeigh wasn't the only person on it. and they said that they couldn't, in the run-up to McVeigh's trial, they couldn't release these videos because the trial was coming up. And after the trial, like I said earlier, they've said we can't release it because of national security, the security of the lie that they've sold to us. And, you know, like I say, there is a recurring blueprint that comes up with all these events. You will obviously know about this absolutely horrific incident we had last summer in Britain, when a innocent Brazilian electrician was shot 8 times by police, 7 times at close range in the head while being held down in a tube station on a tube train. And, of course, all over London, all over the tube and everywhere, you have surveillance cameras. But the tapes that would have shown what the police did and what actually happened, of course, the tapes miraculously weren't working, as they weren't working on the bus in the London bombings last July. It's an amazing coincidence the way they work when they want them to, and suddenly they don't when they don't want them to. And the reason for that is it's all, of course, engineered.
Exactly.
And then comes the question: okay, so why don't they want us to see these things? What is actually happening here? Someone was questioning me, like I said yesterday, about Princess Diana's assassination, and they were going into all the detail of this, and I said, you know, to see whether it was an accident or not. And I said, well, hold on a second. Don't let the complexity, or the apparent complexity, and all the diversions, was there a Fiat Uno, was there a flash in light, and all this stuff, hide basic truths. One, 17 traffic cameras were working every day that year, and every day since, except for the period of time between the car leaving the Ritz Hotel and what happened in the tunnel. At the very same period, as it's been established, the police frequencies in central Paris went down for the same period. Yeah. We don't have to go any further into detail to say, was it an accident? Clearly, look at it. There's an elephant in the living room here. That is taking coincidence to the level of ludicrousness. So that clearly, whatever happened to Diana, the authorities didn't want us to see it. And not only did they not want us to see it, they took steps before it happened to make sure that we wouldn't see it. Therefore, there was a plan to do something to that car. Yeah. We don't have to go any further to appreciate that it was no accident, and none of these things are. They're planned as part of a sequence of events to justify the imposition of the Orwellian state and to remove those who are a threat to that happening. And a threat to the people who are doing it. And Princess Diana was a threat to the British royal family on a major scale by the time that she was killed, because of A, what she knew about them, and B, what she was prepared at that point to start revealing, because she clearly was.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and I agree totally. It's they always, you know, they have it down. You know, they can do whatever they want, pretty much. It's their surveillance and it's their tapes and they make the rules according to their own judgment. So absolutely.
Of course, Henry, we have a media, you know, programs like this apart, the mainstream media, who could expose all this. We have journalists in the, hundreds of thousands, millions probably, all over the world, who are paid every day to tell the people what's actually happening. The fact that they don't investigate beyond tiny tram lines which they work within is one of the key reasons why this truth of what's going on doesn't come out in the mainstream media. I mean, I for instance, in my book, The Biggest Secret, I tell the story of what happened when I met a lady called Christine Fitzgerald, who was a close friend of Princess Diana for 9 years, and she told me the story, I quote it at length in the book, of how Princess Diana came running into her healing center one day in a terrible emotional state, shouting, "They killed him, they killed him, they killed him." And when she calmed down a little bit, she said that years before, she'd been having a relationship when the marriage with Charles broke down with a man called Barry Manicky, who was her personal detective. Barry Manicky had been killed in an apparent motorcycle accident. And the reason that Diana was so upset that day is because she said that Prince Charles's private or senior detective had said to Diana, who was by this time having a relationship with a man called James Hewitt, the detective had said to her, "If this relationship with Hewitt doesn't end, he'll end up like Barry Manicky," which was the confirmation that they'd actually killed her personal detective because of his relationship with Diana, which is why she was inconsolably upset. Yeah. Not only that, James Hewitt is quoted in national newspapers here as saying that he was called by people close to the British royal family who said to him, "If you don't stop this relationship with Diana, you'll end up like Barry Manicky." And the senior detective, Charles's senior detective, according to Diana, said to her, "You know, and you're not indispensable either." Add to that, years later, that her butler, Paul Bowell, produced a letter in which Diana had written to him saying that she feared that her husband, Prince Charles, was planning to kill her in a car accident.
Yes.
Put all these things together, and you have a major story linking all these connections that point that the British royal family are implicated in what happened to her. But where is it in the mainstream media? They don't go into anything, whether it's 9/11 or anything else, to the extent that they connect the dots. Because having been in the mainstream media myself years and years ago, if you operate within the tram lines of acceptability, then you keep your job and you have a hassle-free life.
Yeah.
Once you start crossing into asking real questions, then suddenly, you know, you're not flavor of the month of the newspaper or the television station anymore.
Exactly.
And this is how the whole system works. It rewards you for doing the system's bidding, and it then starts handing out the punishment and hassle if you start questioning the way the system works.
Yes, and now we have, you know, as you say, to tie it back to all the reporters out there, now we have an amazing movement taking place on the internet about these topics and about these subjects, as you know, they are very close, you know, to internet censorship right now. There are so many stories coming up day after day now. And what's your take on this? Are they going to shut down the internet? What do you see?
Well, I was talking about this one, and years ago, when someone was asking me about the internet, and I've written about this in some of my books as well. The internet is a two-edged sword from the point of view of the manipulators, this network of secret societies and bloodlines that call themselves the Illuminati, the illuminated ones,
yes,
they perversely believe they are. One edge of the sword is that the internet makes surveillance of people very, very easy. You know, keeping a track of emails and also following where people surf on the web is a very, very easy way of getting a profile and also keeping an eye on people on a mass scale. However, there's the downside is that it has been a vehicle for the free flow of information, without which we probably wouldn't be having this conversation, because the internet has been such a wonderful means of communicating information to people in large numbers that bypasses the mainstream media, which is just a no-go zone for anything worth hearing.
Mm.
So the process was always going to be, and we're seeing it now, of keeping the good side of the internet from their point of view, the ability to keep, you know, tabs on people, while withdrawing as quickly as they can the downside, which is the free flow of information.
Yeah.
And so what we're seeing now is greater and greater focus and greater efforts on shutting down that side. So I think that is the way they want it to go, for sure.
Yeah.
And they're now even, you know, they're already talking about, for instance, having a two-tier internet,
yeah,
where getting to some websites will be much easier than getting to others because of the way that they'll change the system. In fact, I posted something on my website today. The official inventor of the internet is now saying that it would be, quote, a dark time for the internet if this happened, and it will, and it's supposed to be.
Hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, if we should tie this back to 9/11 here, and I remember an article that you wrote, I don't know how long ago it was now, I guess two years, might be 3 years ago, about the deliberate destruction of America. And, you know, that article, as it is presented today, if one is to read it today, it reads as, you know, the most current events, because many of the things that you elaborated on in that article has simply come true. And I mean, the Americans and the British also, of course, are still in Iraq, and the drum is beating on Iran now. And
yeah.
I mean, what do you think that they will go into Iran?
They want to take over a series of countries. How they take them over depends on what the circumstances are. For instance, they've now subdued Libya without a gun being fired, because Gaddafi has just basically put his hands up, and now, as a result of that, he's getting official recognition from the United States again. If you go quietly, it's like people in general. If you go quietly to the system, then the system will leave you alone because you're not a problem. It's if you don't go quietly, that's when they start focusing on you. So there's many people in the world, Henrik, who will think they live in a free country or in a free world. And the reason they think that is because no one ever seems to obviously tell them what they can and cannot do. But that's the illusion, because they never choose to do anything that's outside what is acceptable to the system.
Yeah.
It's when you start doing that you realize that you have no freedom. You know, it's like, you know, having a rat in a laboratory maze. While it takes the route through the maze that the scientist wants, the rat is absolutely free to do so. But once it goes down a channel that is, you know, not what the scientist taking that analogy a bit further, what happens in these experiments is that when the animal has been shocked enough times trying to go down certain routes, you can take the shock technology away and leave those channels open to go down, but the rats won't, because they've been programmed not to go down there, and just to follow the route that is acceptable to, in effect, the controllers, the scientists running the experiment.
Yeah.
And that is so symbolic, Henrik, of what's happening, where people take the least line of resistance and become subservient clones and automatons to the system. And we're being programmed to do that all the time, and that's why it's important that we refuse to do that and refuse to submit to the program and keep standing up for what we believe to be right.
Yeah.
In terms of the destruction of America, that is essential to the overall plan. You see, if you know where these guys want to go and the techniques they're using to get us there, then you can start to read daily life in a way that is light years ahead of what you could before. Because this is not about prophecy. This is not about sitting in a darkened room and thinking, yes, I think this is going to happen. This is available with basic research into the agenda that's unfolding. And if you know the agenda, predicting the future in terms of themes, if not always detail, is very straightforward.
Yeah.
Where they want to take us is to a centralized global state in which we'll have a world government dictating through a world army and a world central bank with a world currency, electronic, not physical money, and a microchip population where babies are microchipped at birth and connected to a global computer. When I started talking about the microchipping agenda a decade or more ago, people laughed at me. Well, they're not laughing now because it's happening.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that if you want that world structure of a world central a government dictating to every country in the world and having the world army to impose that will against people that don't wish to accept it, then you cannot have superpowers. Because if you have a superpower that has the economic and military might to say to the world government, we're not doing this, okay, we're just not doing it, then you do not have a world dictatorship. And what they're doing, and, you know, they might be sick, and they might be a desperately, desperately imbalanced people, but they are not intellectually stupid. By that, obviously, people like Bush are, but I'm talking about the people that are in the shadows that you never see. They're not stupid people intellectually, and this is a genius, the way they've worked this out.
Absolutely.
They have to destroy America and also China and any superpower that could say no to the world government. And what they're doing is they're using America to destroy America.
Yeah.
And not only that, they're getting America to take the global rap, if you like, as they say in America, to be the global villain for doing it. But actually, the American nation is being used as a vehicle. So they're being used to advance the agenda, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, but at the same time, while they're advancing it, they're also heading towards being destroyed militarily and economically on the journey of doing it, so that they will be subordinate to the world government. And where it's all leading, Henrik, and I've been talking about this, and I was just about the only one one time 15 years ago or so, it's leading to a conflict with China. That's what they want.
Yeah.
They want to bring these superpowers into conflict so that they will be able to bring them both to heel under a world government that says we must have a world government structure to stop this ever happening again.
Yeah.
Now, this is what happened after the First World War. It's a technique that I've coined problem reaction solution. You create the problem, you hide who's really responsible, i.e. you blame someone else for it. You tell the public through an unquestioning media the official story of the problem that you want the people to believe, and then when the people react by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are you going to do about it? it, you then offer the solution to the problems you have covertly created. Yeah. Now, I've just described 9/11. You have the problem, it's Islamic terrorists, and the solution is the war on terror and all this other stuff. It's all a classic technique. Yeah. Now, what they did with the First World War was that they brought these nations into conflict by manipulating both sides. They then offered the League of Nations, because what they desperately have been seeking is centralization of power, because the more diversity of power and decision-making you have, the less control a few are going to have over it. There's just too many points of decision-making for you to control. You need to centralize it incessantly. Yeah. And the more it's centralized, the more power you have over more and more people. And not only that, the more you centralize power, the more power you have to centralize power even quicker, which is why the speed of centralization of power has got quicker and quicker and quicker through the 20th century and into now. Yeah. So the League of Nations was a focus to create a world body through which they could use as a Trojan horse to bring about their world government. It didn't quite work as they wanted to, and so they had a Second World War. And after the Second World War, we had the United Nations, we had the Bretton Woods Agreement with the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and this explosion of world centrally controlled bodies. And this has gone on, and they want a third war now to finally impose the fully-fledged world government to replace the United Nations. And it's interesting that there's a guy in America in the 1800s called Albert Pike, who was a Freemasonic god, if you like, and to them. And he was the man, one of the key men behind the creation of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
And he wrote a letter to one of his secret society buddies.
Giuseppe Mazzini?
He talked about three world wars.
Yeah.
And we've had two, which fitted what he said they would be about. And we're now, I think, heading towards a third one, unless we wake up, because that's the one they want to finally impose their global structure.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was, wasn't it Giuseppe Mazzini? He wrote
that. That's right.
Yeah,
he wrote it to him, yeah.
And, you know, those who, I guess we could say, those who think that they are smart enough who say that they have seen through the American, you know, plan to take all the oil and that it's simply about the oil. That's why they invade Iran and Iraq. Do you have any take on that? Do you think that's the only reason?
Oh, certainly not. One of the things that is very clear to me after all these years of research is that nothing ever happens for one reason. Yes, of course, on one level, it gives them more power if they control Iraqi oil. But there are many other reasons for this. This is about not only controlling Iraqi oil, it's about controlling the whole global oil supply, because if you control that, then you have, you know, dictatorial control over the whole system, which is actually based on oil and consumption, in the same way that they control the global banking system, because even more than oil, the system is controlled by the manipulation of what we bravely call money, which is nothing more than figures on a screen. And so, yes, on that level, it gives them more power, but there are many other levels to it. It's part of a process of leading towards this conflict with China. And interestingly, in recent months, there's been more and more stories in the American media which have been demonizing the China threat. And it's also historical in terms of Iraq. When you follow the families back under different names that are manipulating the world today, you go back to the European aristocracy and royal families. You follow them back to Rome and the Roman Empire and the creation of the Roman Church, which became global Christianity in its various forms.
Yeah.
And if you go back from Rome and you follow them further, you end up in Babylon and Sumer. And where were Babylon and Sumer? In the land that we now call Iraq. So there are, this is operating on many levels. this land of Iraq is a sacred piece of land to this Illuminati, because it's where historically they came out of, and this is the reason that you have so much Babylonian symbolism all around us in the world today.
Yeah.
The Babylonian trinity, religious trinity, was Nimrod, who they symbolize as a fish and a lighted torch.
Yes.
Tammuz, the virgin-born son of Nimrod, who was supposed to have been the reincarnation of Nimrod. That's why they said Nimrod and Tammuz were one, father and son were one. That's where Christianity gets it from.
Yeah.
And the third point of the Babylonian Trinity was a goddess called Queen Semiramis, also known as Ishtar or Istar, and operated under many other names. And when you look at the way the ancients depicted Queen Semiramis, you are looking at a mirror image of the Statue of Liberty,
yeah,
which also has a replica on an island in the River Seine, just down the river from where Princess Diana died, in the Pont d'Alma tunnel.
Yeah.
And Diana was an expression of this ancient goddess and was known as a moon goddess. In Babylon, they said that Semiramis came from the moon in an egg, and she was also known as Istar, like I say, spelled Ishtar, and that's where we get the old Easter egg thing from.
Yeah, exactly.
And the old Easter ceremony comes from Babylon. I mean, the whole of the Christian ritual comes from Babylon, because what happened was the Illuminati relocated from Babylon to Rome, and they changed the religious names, but they kept the same religious system.
Yeah.
So we had Father, Son, and Holy Ghost replacing Father, Son, and Goddess Queen Semiramis, and the Christian religion, particularly the Roman Catholic expression of it, turned Mother Mary into their version of the Babylonian goddess Queen Semiramis. This is why what they call in so many different instances Mother Mary, like the Queen of Heaven and the Virgin Mother.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they called Queen Semiramis in Babylon.
Yeah.
And you have the other side of it, which, as I mentioned earlier, that they used to symbolize Nimrod, the father god in Babylon, as a torch or a lighted torch or a flame.
Yeah.
And so in New York Harbor, as on the island in the River Seine, you have Queen Semiramis, the goddess of Babylon, holding the flame that symbolizes the Babylonian god Nimrod.
Yeah.
So all around us you have this Babylonian symbolism. And incidentally, the Pont d'Alma tunnel where Diana died translates as Bridge of the Moon Goddess.
Mm.
And the great goddess Diana, who's one of the great goddesses worshipped in the ancient world,
yeah,
was worshipped, like I said earlier, as a moon goddess.
That's right.
And on top of the Pont d'Alma tunnel, almost on top, if not on top of where the car actually crashed, you have a massive and exact replica of the flame and torch held by the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
When you go to the Pont d'Alma tunnel, it's a nondescript area. It's just a series of crossroads. It's not a place where you would normally put such a symbol, but you'd put it in a much more prominent area.
Yeah.
But the reason it's there is, A, you've got the Pont d'Alma tunnel, the bridge or passage of the moon goddess, and secondly, that site where the tunnel is now is an ancient site of sacrificial worship to the goddess Diana. Centuries and centuries ago, when we had the Merovingian bloodline in power in that area. One of the ways you can read this Illuminati is their obsession with symbolism,
yeah,
and their obsession with their own history, which they use again and again when they are putting together their events like 9/11, etc., and the London bombings. And you can see these recurring themes if you understand where they're coming from in terms of symbolism.
Absolutely, it's occult rituals basically performed right,
exactly what it is,
right in front of our eyes. And I've been in my previous interviews that I've done with other people here, I've come back to this question quite a lot, and I want to have your take on it. You know, why do they perform this in front of our eyes? Why isn't this hidden in the backdrop, so to speak? Why is it so obvious?
Well, so again, there are a number of reasons for the same question. One is it's their secret language, and it's their signature, if you like, and initiates of that knowledge around the world will be able to read the signature. It's a way of communication. Secondly, they don't really care if a few people find out, because it ain't going to make much difference unless vast numbers of people start to see it and therefore change their behavior to bring an end to this Orwellian state.
Yeah.
And thirdly, one of the things that you find around the world, and I hold my hand up to them, there are enormous numbers now of people who are investigating and researching this whole global conspiracy. However, the vast majority are in the realm of looking at what I call the five sense level of it,
yeah.
The banking manipulation, the political manipulation, the manipulation of events like 9/11, which is great. I mean, and I hold my hand up to them. The more people are aware of that, the better.
Yeah.
But to really understand what's happening, you have to go beyond that. You have to go into the nature of reality and what it is, because it's only there that the answers lie in terms of many questions about what's happening, and also where the answers lie in terms of how we change it. And they understand that energy is manipulatable. They understand that our reality is not the physical reality that we think we're looking at. The reality around us is actually vibrational fields, and we decode those vibrational fields into what we think is outside of us. Like, I'm sitting in this room now, and I appear to be looking outside of myself at a wall and a fireplace and a television, etc. But in fact, in the form that I'm looking at them, a three-dimensional world, it only exists in my head, in my brain. My brain is decoding vibrational frequency fields into that holographic, apparently three-dimensional picture. This is why when you go into quantum physics, you find that nothing can be solid. It's impossible, because everything's made up of atoms in terms of this solid world that we think we're looking at.
Yes.
But atoms are basically empty. There's nothing in them. As someone said, if you take an atom to be the size of a cathedral, then even the nucleus in the center of the atom is only about the size of a 10-cent piece.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is what we would perceive as empty space. And if you go deeper into the nucleus and the electrons spinning around inside the atom, you'll find that they are empty as well. They're not solid. So how can I be sitting on a solid chair looking at a solid wall when they're made up of atoms and cannot be solid? It's because my brain is decoding the frequency fields into that holographic picture. The slower something is vibrating, for instance, the more solid it is decoded into.
Yeah.
The faster something is vibrating, the frequency is vibrating, the more we decode that into something that is less and less solid, until it's vibrating so quickly that it's left the frequency, the radio station, if you like, that we call the five sense world, that we can actually access.
Yeah.
So all the time we are decoding frequency fields into apparent holographic reality, in exactly the same way as when television programs are broadcast, you don't see episodes of Friends or Frasier flying through the buildings and over the trees. They're broadcast as frequency fields, and the television then decodes those frequency fields into pictures, and the only place that television exists as we perceive television, pictures and programs, is actually on the television screen. Everywhere else, television is frequency fields and electronic circuits.
Yeah.
Same with the internet. The only place the internet exists as we perceive the internet, websites and graphics and all this stuff, is actually on the screen of the computer. Everywhere else it is electronic circuits. And it's the same with our reality. The only place this reality exists around us that we think we're in is in our heads. And if you know that, Hendrik, and you keep it systematically, that knowledge of the nature of reality, from the people, then you are immediately in an immense position of power, because you understand how the people are creating their reality, what we call daily experience, and they don't. So you can manipulate how we decode our reality to fit the daily experience that they want us to have. And it's very much the same principle as a stage hypnotist. What a stage hypnotist is doing is, because just a little bit of background, what they found through psychological research is that our brain is editing all the time what we turn into holographic three-dimensional reality.
Yeah.
Of the information that we receive, 50%, sometimes more, of what we receive is actually edited by the brain in terms of what it chooses not to decode, and also what it manifests as apparent reality, which is not there at all. And this editing process, taking things out and putting things in, is done on the basis of our belief in what is real.
Yeah.
When I said to Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman, many years ago, why, if there are other entities operating in our reality, why don't more people see them? Non-human entities I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And he said, because they are so fantastic compared with what people believe is possible and what people believe is real, that their brain simply doesn't decode them, in effect, into a reality that they can see in terms of the world around them. And what happens with a stage hypnotist is he is manipulating this process. So he will implant a belief, the key word, get someone to believe something and they will experience it in reality.
Yeah.
The stage hypnotist is getting the stooge on the stage to believe, for instance, that the potato they're eating is actually an apple. And what happens, because what is taste? It is an electrical message from the tongue to the brain, and the brain decides what it tastes like, not the tongue.
Yeah.
And so the brain decodes the message that says this is a potato into the message that says this is an apple because of the implanted belief from the hypnotist, and they taste an apple. Now, in the corner of virtually every room, every living room, we have the world's greatest hypnotist, the television. And it is constantly telling us what to believe is real about the world and what is happening around us. And interestingly, when you're watching television, your brain waves go into a state akin to what a hypnotist takes you into when you're in a hypnotic trance.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing, not just through television, but massively through it, but also through political statements, through what we call the education system, is that they are implanting a belief in reality into the population. And once we take that on, we start to decode reality into a holographic three-dimensional version of what we've been manipulated to believe in.
Yeah, and I remember, I think what you who highlighted this, I picked it up from your site, I think, a Russian article about how words and even symbols affect our DNA, and how...
Exactly. So now we've come around to the question you asked, Henrik.
Yeah.
Why are they obsessed with putting symbols and their ritual memorabilia around us? Because they understand that human language is I mean, ask anyone, just put your hand close to your mouth when you're talking, and what do you hear? You feel, you feel the vibration of the words coming out of your mouth, because that's what words are. But why do we have vocal cords that produce our language? It's because they are instruments of vibration.
Yeah.
And so words are vibrational codes, and they can affect us if you use the right words in the right way. Because it's not, you know, it's like phonetics. It's not just what the word, how the word is spelt. It's how the word sounds that affect us. So they manipulate language in that way as well.
Yeah.
And also, words are not the only form of communication. We are being communicated with all the time as we look at symbols. Symbols represent vibrational frequencies and energy codes and mathematical codes. And simply by seeing them, they affect us on a deep subconscious level. And that's why they put them all around us. Because what something represents is the energy that it will vibrate. If you take something and you say, to me, that symbolizes this. Well, the very fact that you have used your mind to impregnate that symbol to mean whatever you've chosen means that symbol will now start vibrating a vibrational representation of what you have decided it stands for.
Yeah.
Say you've got a piece of artwork or something, a piece of pottery, and you say, to me, this represents absolute pure love.
Yeah.
That will start, because you've impregnated it with your thought fields to represent that, when you pick it up, if someone felt it and tuned into it, they'd say, oh, this feels so nice. It's like love. Yeah. It just feels like love. And it's not, it's simply because of what it represents to that person. That's what it becomes. Now, the Illuminati have symbols, a whole language of symbols, which over centuries and centuries and centuries have represented certain things, like the reverse pentagram in Satanism represents deep evil. And they reverse many ancient symbols because in reversing them, it gives them a focus that reversal refers to the opposite of what maybe the symbol stood for before. Yes. It stands for evil. And so when people look at that reverse pentagram, they get a feeling, oh, don't like that, because of what it's giving off. And that this is what they do. They're operating on from an understanding of what reality is and how you can manipulate it. And the biggest part of it is to implant in people preconceived ideas about everything. Because the preconceived idea will edit out anything that challenges the preconceived idea. A simple example of that, I've seen television programs where they've got two people together who have real preconceived ideas about each other. They don't like each other. They get them to talk and they film it. And then they take them away individually and they ask them what the other person said and how they said it. They then play them back the original conversation, and they're shocked to see that the other person did not say what they said in the way they thought they said it, and often did not even say what they thought they said. Mm. Why? Because the preconceived idea they had about each other received what the person was actually saying and how they said it, and the preconceived idea, the belief, then edited what they were hearing to fit what they thought about that person to start with. And so if they can implant a preconceived idea about Muslim people, a preconceived idea about this person or this event, then what happens is vast numbers of people who succumb to that programming then start to edit out anything that challenges their perception of it. And this is why people like me and you will go, it's so obvious, why can't they see it? They can't see it because of
David,
this process of editing perception based on preconceived belief.
Absolutely, David. Thank you. We're totally out of time, and we can go on for hours here, but we got to end it. And I would really like if we could do this some other time again.
That'd be a pleasure. Yeah, really good.
It was wonderful to have you on. So I hope that... let me say again, David, thank you very much.
Thank you. I look forward to the next time.
Yeah, and let me say to all the listeners, you have listened to Red Ice Radio, and thank you so much for tuning in, and listen to us again next week. Bye-bye, everyone.